Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and if someone uses neuro-enhancing drugs like Adderall or Ritalin to do better in school, are they cheating? Is it like using performance-enhancing drugs in sports? That's the question for today's installment of the Ask a Bioethicist series. Each week this month, we've tackled thorny bioethical conundrums with Nita Farahani, professor of law and philosophy and professor of genome science and policy, commonly known as a bioethicist, at Duke University. Welcome back, Nita.
Thanks. It's great to be back with you.
And listeners, what do you think? Is it cheating? And what, if any, limitations should be placed on neuroenhancement, which we will describe and define? 212-433-WNYC. And remember, we're not talking about using those drugs as prescribed by a doctor for ADHD. I'm talking about using those drugs to pull all-nighters, studying for a final or writing a term paper. And as neuroenhancement becomes more advanced, have you heard of surgical neuroenhancement? What should the line be there? And does it start to change our definition of normal cognitive behavior? What do you think, and what questions would you like to ask a bioethicist? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And Nita, you want to jump right in on this? Is it cheating?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm joining you right now while I'm enjoying one of my favorite neuroenhancers, which is a cup of tea with some sugar in it.
Or is it the caffeine?
Well, you know, it's actually both of them, although caffeine certainly is a better characterized neuroenhancer. And I really can't function all that well each morning unless I have that very popular neuroenhancer.
Aha, dependency.
It's dependency, and it makes me feel more alert, and it makes me feel more engaged, and, wakes me right up and helps me have a more active brain. And I suspect a number of your listeners right now are actually enjoying a cup of coffee or something similar as they ponder this question. So the real question is, what's different, if anything, about something like Adderall or, you know, really any of the neuroenhancers? Because there's a lot of them besides the ADHD drugs, some of which you could actually get by prescription, some of which you can get on the Silk Road or somewhere like that.
And there's nothing new about, if all we're talking about is college students taking drugs to stay awake, pull all-nighters to study and do papers. I mean, people have been taking caffeine pills and speed forever and ever, it seems.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You know, when I was in college, I took organic chemistry, and one of my favorite labs, we isolated pure caffeine from tea bags. They made us really carefully measure each and every little amount that we extracted to make sure that we didn't take it home and enjoy it. But I can assure you lots of that caffeine disappeared from that lab, and lots of people stayed up and pulled all-nighters in order to study for their tests. So, you know, is it really cheating? From my perspective, no. I think if we can enhance our brains and enable ourselves to become more productive, I don't really think that there's something all that wrong with that.
So go ahead.
Let's take it to the sports analogy, because that's where most people's minds go, right?
Yeah.
They say, look at Lance Armstrong, look at all the different people who are doping and how wrong that is. And I think it's perfectly fine for us to think when we watch sports, what we really want to watch is people who are honing their natural talents, whatever natural might mean. And it might be the case that there are a bunch of us who would actually pay a lot of money to watch people who are on neuroenhancers or body enhancers in some other way. And so we could have a baseball league and a schmaceball league, and the schmaceball league would be those people who were doped up on steroids and hit a lot more home runs. But in the game of life, is it really the case that we think there are cheaters if they get an edge by drugs or nutrition or early education or anything else? I think that's just life.
Well, the cutting edge of neuroenhancement, which we mentioned earlier, or maybe a cutting edge, is surgical neuroenhancement or neural prosthesis. I've heard of electrical stimulation of neural tissue by surgically implanted neuroelectronic devices as a therapeutic measure to restore lost neural function. But maybe it could also be used just to get an edge. Have you ever heard of it being done?
So a little softer of an intervention than direct surgery is transcranial direct stimulation, direct current stimulation. And that doesn't really require that you implant anything into your head. So a lot of people, I don't know if it's a lot, but quite a few people are starting to create do-it-yourself at-home transcranial direct current stimulation devices, which is like a little headband that you could put on that has a few little electrode leads on it. And well-positioned, you can give yourselves little zaps, which can improve learning. So if I'm trying to learn something, I can give myself little zaps while I'm learning, and it may help me to learn faster, store the memory better, process the information more quickly. And that I've heard of quite a bit, actually.
Let's take a phone call. Dan in Somerset, you're on WNYC. Hello, Dan.
Hi. This is the second show you have on the ethics of something. And the problem is that you build in an assumption of a cause and effect, none of which have been proven, none of which are really clear. For example, the electrical stimulation has terrible downsides, and the same thing is in sports. There are terrible downsides, which if someone like the governor of California is willing to pay for, that his heart is going to be so damaged and so on, you know, that's his affair. But the essential thing is that when you discuss the ethics of using an advancement or an edge, you are assuming that the edge is there, and you're kind of advertising an edge there that just is not proven to be there yet.
Well, I think he really raises two questions. I think they're both important, Professor. So one is about side effects, and is there a downside that we need to acknowledge to neuroenhancers, assuming they do actually otherwise work? And the other question is, do they work?
Yeah, I think he actually raises a third question, too, which is if there are side effects, do we allow people to run the risk themselves, or do we regulate it and prevent them from having access to it? So let's take them one at a time. First is, do all of the enhancers work, and how is the data on it? There is some good data on some of the enhancers, like modafinil, for example, is a pretty well-characterized drug that was tested pretty extensively, first in a military population, which was originally supposed to replace caffeine, to have far fewer side effects and to increase alertness and awakeness in a population of people who really need to be awake for their jobs in order for safety and efficacy. Those are pretty well characterized, and the side effects of it are starting to be well characterized, although we don't have long-term data on it. Some of the other ones, like transcranial direct current stimulation, really new and novel, and so you know, it remains to be seen both exactly how well it works, how it actually works, and what the side effects are. Just a study this past week came out that showed even if you increase the rate at which you learn, you may be causing long-term memory effects or other types of damage. So what do we do when we have limited safety and efficacy information with drugs or medical devices? Do we regulate it and prohibit it, or do we enable people to run the risk themselves? And I think that organizations or agencies like the Food and Drug Administration can serve an incredibly useful role by forcing information, that is, requiring disclosure and greater transparency around the safety and efficacy data to enable people to make better choices. But as the caller himself says, if a person wants to run that risk and decides that it's worth it to have the short-term enhancement, even with the long-term damage, I think that we should enable them to make those choices.
We're talking about the bioethics of neuroenhancement with Duke University bioethicist Nita Farahani. Have a question, folks? 212-433-WNYC. Do you want to ask a bioethicist something? 212-433-9692, something in this general realm, or post a comment or question to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. But again, the phone number, 212-433-9692. A lot of commentators say this is just leveling the playing field. We have some things coming in on Facebook as well. Christine there writes, is being born with a high IQ a form of cheating? We all have to work with what we're given, and advancements help level the playing field, unquote. And I think this gets at the larger question about whether the introduction of these drugs outside of clinical use changes the way we think about normal cognitive function and raises questions of inequality. There's already such a big debate in New York, for example, about the advantages that better off people have being able to take test prep and stuff to apply for Stuyvesant High School and things like that. Maybe access to advanced neuro enhancement will be limited to people with money or good health care, maybe, if it means you get into Yale. You know, is this another inequality, and does that raise ethical questions?
So, you know, a couple of interesting thoughts that your question raises. First, I want to tell you a little anecdote, which is I was giving a talk recently, and it was about, you know, cognitive enhancers and the ways in which we can access and alter our brains. And I had one of the audience members come up to me afterwards, and she said, you know, my son is about to take the SAT in a few weeks, and he's retaking it because he didn't do as well as I think he should have on the first go round. And I'm wondering if I should get him some Ritalin or Adderall to take it, because I understand lots of other students are taking it and that they're taking it especially on test day. And he hasn't been diagnosed with ADHD or anything like that, but it seems to me like that would really help his performance. And should I do so? And that's not an uncommon question for me to get. I think in general, it's a bad idea to experiment on test taking day, but it's not a crazy idea to think that this might level the playing field. And on that front, some of the research shows that the distribution of the effects of these drugs may help people at a lower distribution in IQ or a lower distribution in performance scores more than it helps people at the higher end, meaning that it kind of narrows the distribution of normal and makes people kind of more closely aligned. So it doesn't benefit people at the high end as much as people at the low end. So it might be actually the kind of great leveler and great equalizer, but for the question of how do you get access? And the more restricted it is, the less likely it is to actually serve that function. There's a flip side to all of this, of course, which is if it sets our new normal, does it mean that the person who approached me in the audience that her son needs to be on it because everybody is already enhancing themselves? Right. And, you know, that's a good question, which is, you know, do we worry that the more technological enhancements and advancements that we make as a society, the more we require people to be on drugs or surgical interventions or other types of things? The problem is that happens across the board, right? So in order to be competitive in society, you need to be educated. In order to actually have good brain development, you need to have good nutrition. And you know, the early exposure to reading and early exposure to other types of enhancements that are soft enhancements have to happen at an early age in order to level the playing field as well. So I think these access questions aren't unique to this area, but it does raise the question of how do we ensure better access if we do think it's going to be something that's integral to society.
Let's take another call. Yang in Edison, you're on WNYC. Hello, Yang. Thanks for calling up.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
I just had a question. I know we've been talking about the ethics of whether it's okay to use it to level the playing field or not, but my question is about what about students who are using it now for, you know, they get a prescription for ADHD or they get a medicine from their friend who has a prescription and they're using it for a different purpose. If the school catches them for that, should they be punished for the fact that they're using it illegally right now?
Yeah, so I think that's a good question, you know, but there's I'm going to divide your question into two. One is, should they be punished for illegal conduct? I think in general, society has an interest in promoting its laws. So that to the extent that somebody's doing something illegal, using drugs off-label, things like that, we have an interest in enforcing our laws. But the second question I want to divide it into is, should it be illegal? Right. Mm-hmm. Which is, should we actually be prohibiting people from using these types of drugs? And if they are well characterized, we understand the safety and efficacy of them, people understand the risks and benefits of them, then I don't find it quite as problematic. But with children, it's harder, right? Because they're still, their brains are developing. Oftentimes, they're not in a position to be able to consent and decide for themselves. That's an area in which I do think greater paternalism makes sense.
Yang, do you have an opinion about this yourself since you raised the question? Because another aspect of it is that doctors are prescribing these drugs like Ritalin and Adderall outside of an ADHD diagnosis, which they're not technically supposed to do. So technically, it's a black market that people are getting either from their doctors or from their friends. But do you think it should be legal or illegal?
I personally just have a general issue with the over-medication that we're having in our society, and I do think it is an issue, especially because people who can afford it and are, like we've talked before, you guys have just mentioned that people who can afford it can get their hands on it more. So I think that over-medication right now is sort of an issue we might see later on. I don't have an opinion on where it might go, but I do think that later on we're going to see a lot more effects of it, and it might be clearer to tell at that point whether it's a quick fix or it is sort of a really long-term issue. And I think at that point we might be able to better say whether it's ethically correct or not.
All right, Yang, thank you. Please call us again. Go ahead, Nita.
Let me just push on this idea of over-medication a little bit. So I get migraines, and my neurologist is fabulous because she likes to prescribe things off-label that have early data that suggests that they might be beneficial for migraine. And migraine affects tons of people, and it's really poorly characterized, and it's probably a huge category that describes many different things. A lot of the different drugs that I've had have as a side effect of them some sort of boost. So, for example, there's one drug, Namenda, which is prescribed for Alzheimer's patients. And there's some early data that shows that it may actually serve as a good preventive for migrainers. The benefit is that because it was designed to control some of the early symptoms of Alzheimer's, that it improves your memory. And I think that's terrific. I love getting that boost. Even if I didn't have migraines, I might think that it was a great thing and that it might help me quite a bit in my everyday life. So what does it mean to over-medicalize? Well, another way of saying that is we have medical interventions that enable us to improve our performance. And as long as I understand that there are potential side effects and I'm willing to acknowledge and run the risk of those side effects, why is that over-medicalization rather than just an enablement to do things better?
But there you get into a parallel with the steroids in baseball discussion, which is I think that a lot of baseball players felt pressure to take steroids because they knew other players were doing it and were going to have a leg up over them to exceed in a professional sports career. And so if this becomes the expectation and even normal life, including, you know, high school and college and the job market, are competitive enterprises. And so many people start doing this because it's normal and they feel like it helps them. But there's also the downside of side effects. Then you wind up being pressured by the new normal to do something that may be dangerous to your health, as has happened in the case of those ball players. Is that okay?
So I wouldn't call it pressure. I'd call it incentivized, because I think pressure comes with a negative connotation. So in the sports arena, which is competitive and a particular game, I think it's different than in the game of life, which is, do we have incentives every day to advance ourselves, and do we face stiff competition in an increasingly more competitive and productive world? And the answer is yes. So is it bad that we have new opportunities and new enhancements that could enable us to outperform our competition? I don't think so.
Maybe,
but
if it comes with significant health risks.
If it comes with a significant health risk, then I think it's more problematic. Now, do I think that there's widespread adoption of drugs when there are significant side effects to doing so? Maybe there's a short-term blip. I doubt that there is a long-term market, you know, incentive for people to take drugs that are going to significantly shorten their lives or have significant side effects.
And maybe an example of that is that for a while in the 80s, cocaine was the rage on Wall Street and among law firms for people, you know, working really long hours. And when some of the side effects of that came up and the death rate from cocaine and stuff like that and the addiction rate, people in those circles tended to walk away from it, and I don't think it goes on today in the way that it did at that time.
That's right, and it carries with it a pretty stiff taboo. People recognize there's a significant risk of addiction and a significant risk of side effects, and you know it has fallen somewhat out of favor as a result. Whereas a lot of these other newer drugs that are coming out have so far a very clean side effect profile.
Before we run out of time, I want to get another wrinkle of an ethical question in here, and it comes from Barbara in Westchester, who's a school psychologist. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
That's good. I've been a school psychologist up in Westchester for over 20 years. And in my experience, I've worked with both the special education population as well as mainstream students. And I certainly feel that with students who have learning disabilities, attention deficit disorder, et cetera, using a neuro-enhancing drug is definitely an attempt to level the playing field. I've also seen that some of the learning disabled students who take those drugs also have some very unpleasant side effects. On the other hand, students who are in mainstream, the parents who have called me to talk about whether or not they should get a temporary prescription for ADHD so that their kids can do better on SATs, I found that these are the parents who are already culturally advantaged and economically advantaged. So I certainly don't see that as
so you're saying the drugs,
the
and we're going to run out of time, so I'm going to sum this up. Kids without learning disabilities are actually helped, given more of a competitive advantage than kids with learning disabilities by taking the medications. So it's another unequalizer, Nita.
Yeah, I mean, this is true across the board, whether it's neuroenhancer or any other educational intervention, test prep classes, private education, better nutrition, early reading, more time with children. All of these things are competitive advantages that are given. We have significant challenges with distributions of risk and benefits across society, but I'm not sure restricting access is the answer to equalization. It seems to me like making access more widely available and more easy to obtain would be better than trying to restrict it just to the privileged few.
Well, another fascinating intersection of medical science and ethics. Edition 3 of our four-part March series, Ask a Bioethicist, with Nita Farahani, professor of law and philosophy and professor of genome sciences and policy at Duke University. She will be back for one more round next week. This has been so interesting. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.